Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Neil Coolong in a few moments to talk about the Steelers and the NFL. But first of all, our play-by-play call of the day.
1-1 the count. Here's the pitch. Swung on. Hit high. Oh. Hit deep. Way back to left. And that ball is gone. Grand slam into the scoreboard porch in left. Aaron Altair has turned the game around.
And I believe that's the first grand slam that Clayton Kershaw's ever given up. And the Phillies won it last night 4-3 over the Dodgers. A little bit later in the show, we're going to talk about this. Believe it or not, 9 NBA teams lost money after revenue sharing last year. They've got this multi-billion dollar TV contract. How do you do that? Bucks, Cavaliers, Grizzlies, Atlanta Hawks, Orlando Magic, Brooklyn Nets, Detroit Pistons, San Antonio Spurs, and the Washington Wizards all lost money after revenue sharing. I can't see how.
We may have to get back in touch with Dieter Kirkenbach, our NBA guy. By the way, congrats to Dieter, now working in the Oakland area, now with the Mercury News.
Good. San Jose's a great paper to be with.
Yes, he's dialed into that, and of course the Raiders too, so we'll get back in touch with him.
All right, clean, smart, efficient, gets it done. That is Neil Coolong, USA Today. Neil, welcome.
That's my new tagline. I'm writing that down now.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be. This is it.
Perfect.
It's where you need to be, my man. It's where you need to be. How good was that performance for a game two performance? You know, because it's interesting, in college we always talk about best improvement game one to game two because you've had a game under your belt. I think the way the preseason plays out, it may be the way it's going in the NFL too.
You know, I would agree with that. I think almost to a point where week one, to some degree, is almost like preseason week five, in that they're just not – you saw it in week one. Teams just did not look the way that you kind of thought that they would, and it kind of leads me to wonder how much a lesser workload in training camp does affect the early part of the season, or are our expectations just getting completely out of whack? It's something that Mike Tomlin said at his press conference was, we still have a long way to go as a team. We're still building a team, and you know, I've been railing about it all offseason. They have so much continuity from both a coaching perspective as well as a player perspective. You think they'd be able to hit ground running at some point. You know, I don't want to overstate right. You know, how good of a team they are, what they've built, but they don't look like they've played together for a while right now. I'm still seeing a decent amount of mistakes. There are things that they're going to work on. There was definitely an improvement, especially playing and largely dominating a much better team in week two than they played in week one. So you have to be, you know, optimistic about where they're going. I'm just wondering why it seems like they started over the drawing board all over again. And all these players have been with the team. There aren't a whole lot of new guys out there. I mean, right. Yes, you've got Joe Hayden out there, but it's the same offensive line. They're getting better. There's work in progress, but very few offensive lines in the NFL have both as much continuity as this group has, as well as having the same coach in place. I would think they'd be doing the same type of stuff that they've been doing. It doesn't really look like they're doing that, though. So, yeah, I mean, it's still early in my mind. It's not quite what I expected to see, but 2-0 is a pretty good place for them.
No, it's a great place to be in. If you want, we can transition and talk about the Giants. I want to ask about the Steeler defense. Was it tough to get a gauge on whether they got better because suddenly in week two they're in a December situation facing a backup quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, the level of quarterback play wasn't probably what they would have expected it to have been. But at the same time, I don't think Keenum played all that badly. What I really saw out of Minnesota that surprised me was an offensive line that took at least one full step back from what it did against New Orleans. If you're a Saints fan, I feel really bad for you today because the Vikings offensive line got manhandled. I mean, Cam Hayward played perhaps one of the best games he's ever played. He was living in their backfield. You saw a lot of explosive plays from Bud Dupree. T.J. Watt again had a pretty solid performance until he went out. Anthony Piccolo was playing well. The front seven did really well for the Steelers against a group in Minnesota I thought would have performed a lot better than they did. I guess you might be able to say something to the effect of it's a new quarterback that kind of throws the rhythm of your offense off, but the interior line got absolutely dominated by Hayward for the majority of the snaps of the game. And to me, it didn't seem typical of a unit that's kind of ready to play and ready to protect whoever's back there. So for me, it was a display of raw strength and ability from the Steelers up front. Perhaps not the greatest of competition in terms of who's throwing the ball down the field. I didn't think he did that badly overall. The Steelers really just owned the game at the line of scrimmage and took it to him.
What do you think of Le'Veon Bell so far, Neil?
I don't know. I jokingly said this on your show last week. I'm not sure who, number 26 they're trotting out there is, but it's not the guy that we've seen the last 2 years. This has just been driving me nuts. I've been watching film back of him last year compared to this year. I'm taking screenshots and trying to put them on top of each other to see if maybe he's a little bit bigger now than he was, but he doesn't have even close to the burst, the acceleration that he had. And I've been raving about that ever since he cut 20 pounds from his rookie year to his second year, and he looks like he's a rookie again. Honestly, it's taking him a while to identify where he wants to go. It's never like he's been a running back that's had gaping holes in front of him. They just kind of they run zone. He gets the ball and kind of sits there and waits to shoot his hole. He's not doing that. He's passing those opportunities, and even when he has them, he's not putting his foot in the ground and getting up the field as quickly or as powerfully as he has. To me, I don't want to speculate. He'll never even say if this is the case or not, but I can't help but wonder if he isn't still hurt. He just does not look like the same player at all. And you can talk up and down about rust, this and that. He's played two games now. Le'Veon Bell is always in excellent shape. That's just the gift that God gave him. But he doesn't look like the same guy to me at all. He says he's one play away from busting out and making a big play. I don't see that happening. I really don't. He's just not a very fast running back.
Should James Conner get a few more snaps, or do you go with the one that brought you?
I think you go with the one that brought you. You have to kind of work through it one way or another. They're going to have to kind of figure it out because, it's not going to – they're going to have to start even further behind if they put Connor in there outside of, letting Bell have a series here and there, which I think is probably a good idea. Connor made a nice run, the one touch that he had. You're hoping for that kind of thing from Connor this year and play him on special teams. Bell has to be the guy. They're going to have to work with it as best they can. If they know something is going on with Bell from an injury perspective, maybe they might think about limiting it, limiting his action if they get ahead a good amount, which they very well could against a pretty struggling Bears team next week. But by and large, they're going to have to find a way to get him the ball 20 times and let him either play himself into shape or kind of figure out where they need to be with his health. If it is something they have to shut him down for a game to get him healthy, they're going to need to know that. And the best way to do that is to give him the ball and figure it out.
Let's steal the line from the movie Apollo 13. What on the spacecraft is good?
Yes, exactly. They you have to like what you're seeing defensively. You put Case Keenum in there, maybe it's not all that good, but they still did a much better job in the secondary this game. There were a few gaps, I think, in their run game that they could have improved upon. But overall, I the story to me of that game was the defense. I thought they were flying around the ball. They played very aggressively, very strong. It looks to me like they're fast again. Now they've gotten the youthful – injection that they've had over the last couple of years to kind of replace the old regime, that the younger guys are now much more aware than they have been. They don't look like a rookie unit early in the season the way they have the last couple of seasons. Sean Davis is playing fast, and he still made a couple mistakes, but you can see the playmaking potential from him. I thought Hayden did a much better job in this game than he did in the first game. So I'm happy defensively with where they're going. We're only going to see them get better as well, and you kind of hope that Watt's injury isn't anything significant, because you're getting more and more out of him every game. I've been impressed basically with every snap he's played. He's definitely way above where I thought he would be, and I think he can be a pretty strong contributor by midseason toward the end, and they're really going to need those guys then.
How long can Mike Lennon hang on to his job with Trubisky there?
You know, it's funny. I was talking to my Bears editor yesterday. Brian Perez runs our Bears Wire site. He's beside himself with what John Fox is doing, what he's seeing of Mike Glennon. He's a scout as well, so he knows the game really well. He says Glennon's just a complete disaster. He has no idea why he's still out there. There really doesn't seem to be much of a point. If this team isn't going to win, that's fine. Then you may as well get the rookie Trubisky some snaps. And he's kind of waiting on for that moment. But Glennon was just horrible against the Bucs. I mean, you watch him, and it honestly just kind of seems to lazily go about what he's doing. It really seems like an internal problem that's going on within Chicago, and I'm not even sure if John Fox lasts the season. But if there's in the past couple years, by and large, the Steelers have put up a real clunker in week three, especially when they're playing it on the road. They played really well in 2014 against Carolina, but otherwise, week three is when they lost. Week four was to the Bucs and Mike Glennon. The Philadelphia game last year, they played Baltimore, I think, a couple years ago, and just got doors blown off of them. They haven't played well on the road early in the season. That really is the bottom line. I'm not sure if it's the best opportunity for them to have on their schedule. It might be the best team at the best time to find a way to get the team much more in rhythm on the road than they have been. So you have to be optimistic about their chances to, surprisingly enough, rarely go 3-0. They don't hit the 3-0 mark much. And they've as we've seen so far, they've had a pretty favorable schedule in that regard. So they're going to have to pick these up, because at the end of the season, you're looking at New England, you're looking at Green Bay, you've got Baltimore. It's going to be a tough road to hoe at the end of the year. They're going to have to take down the easy marks when they can. They can't have letdown games like they did last season, especially on the road.
I've said this about both ESPN and the NFL, two powerhouse entities that I felt 5 years ago were each so sure of themselves in every decision that they made, that everything would turn either outright or turn to gold. And now I feel like both entities are guessing a lot. Part of that guesswork is, hey, let's put two teams in Los Angeles. USC against Texas drew 84,000 in the Coliseum Saturday night. The Rams and Chargers both played at home on Sunday and drew a total of 81,000. What? I mean... Is there anything you could say about that at all, other than the numbers speaking for themselves?
I don't think it was even 81. If you watch that, it to me looked far less than that.
Well, I'm talking tickets.
Might have
sold.
Even pumped them up a little.
Yeah,
I guess, or at least given to corporations to give out to people that didn't use them. I think there are a couple things with that. One, looking at the specific issue, there wasn't really a whole lot in Los Angeles that suggested people really wanted to get a team. I'll withhold judgment for when they have their new stadium. They have a little bit more time to kind of let two new regimes kind of take over. You've got two new head coaches there, two teams that are kind of on the downswing of things anyway.
Right.
I'm not surprised with the attendance that they're pulling now. I don't think now is really the issue. They get their new stadium, and you give two quality coaches an opportunity to build their team and kind of figure out what direction they're going to go in and get people excited about it again. It, simply put, it's got to take root. We'll see what happens with that, although I was very skeptical of the move in the first place for the same reasons that you mentioned. It just doesn't really seem to be an NFL town, and we know that because two teams have already left this town at least once. So along with that, the more and more I'm looking at this, and this kind of hit me last year around week two, week three, it was like, there's just something that isn't right about this anymore. It almost seems like there just isn't much spontaneous football anymore. Talking about celebrations or anything like that. I'm putting my finger on it a little bit more now. To me, it's the fact that you're seeing a completion percentage increase so dramatically compared to history, yet now we're seeing less scoring.
But nobody's going anywhere, Neil. Nobody's going anywhere with their completion percentage.
They're just not getting it down the field. And the prime target for me in this is Drew Brees. You look at Drew Brees' numbers right now, looks like an MVP candidate.
Right.
He's generating no points. Why? Because, in my opinion at least, all they're doing is throwing short and basically establishing a run game out of a short passing attack, but that's all they're doing.
Right.
Nobody is taking a chance down the field anymore. And with that, what you're really saying, in my opinion, is that the root problem, you can't find enough offensive linemen to protect a quarterback for 5 seconds so he can take a 7-step drop and get the ball down the field.
Exactly.
All you're doing now is drafting really small, quick receivers that can operate in short space and let them go for 6 yards a pop. Eventually, one of those isn't going to work. You're going to punt. You might get down into the red zone. You might, you know, pull a shovel pass like the Steelers have 2 weeks in a row now. It just isn't nearly as exciting as it used to be.
Nobody takes any chances, Neil.
They don't want to get the ball down the field.
Right.
You know, interceptions are they're reacted to far worse than they probably really are. You know,
exactly.
I read an article on this on the Ringer earlier today. They were quoting Chris Sims, and I'll paraphrase him, something to the effect of, "If you show me a team that has a great completion percentage, I'll probably say that your offense sucks."
Yeah.
And to me, it's like that's exactly it. You can complete all the passes in the world. You're not producing. You know, it just isn't working across the league. And we're seeing it now. I think it's been growing into this over the last season and a half, 2 seasons. And, you know, even when the Patriots came out flat, it kind of like you're not even sure who's good. But even more compelling to me, who are the 9 worst teams in the NFL right now? It's really hard to say that there's one.
Right.
There are 9 of them. They all could take that argument right now. It's just bizarre. It's a really strange league right now.
I'll give you an example, and I've cited it on the show a couple times. The Giants were playing the Cowboys in the opening Sunday night game. The Cowboys are up 19-3, so it's a 16-point game, which means you need 2 touchdowns and 2 2-point conversions just to get it to overtime if you can, including an onside kick. Giants took over with about 2.5, 2:30, 2:40 to go in the game. Right? They ended the game still with the ball on the Dallas 38 and no points. What good did that do?
To me, in my opinion, if you have too many offensive hired coaches, too many offensive coordinators, and too many quarterbacks that don't want to throw interception.
Right.
Therefore, they're not going to ever get the ball down the field. And it just almost seems like we're getting into a point where the quarterback stats are more important than the win-loss record of a team. And you saw it last night with Eli. When did he even try to get the ball down the field?
Exactly.
Along with that, you have Eric Flowers, who was drafted in the top 10 to play left tackle. He is the worst left tackle I've ever seen.
Yes.
He was a complete walking disaster.
Yes.
Why is he still on the field? In my opinion, it's because the offensive line group, and tell me if you agree with this, the offensive line group is by far and away the most technically reliant position in the NFL.
No doubt.
That unit, that room, has to be a functioning, highly technical group. They have to work together. They have to do things the right way. But on the other side of it, let's just take the tackles, for example. They can basically just do nothing but rush the passer.
That's right.
I'm not saying all of them do that. They can put their hand on the ground and just go. So you have one group that has to be completely technical proficient, which obviously is going to take time, versus another group that can trot a 22-year-old out there that runs Mach 3 and can blow a corner on anybody.
Right.
So what really is the challenge here? You have to find a large-bodied guy that has feet to move with a guy like that. And you have to get him in the lineup today, otherwise your quarterback's going to get killed.
Right.
In my opinion, it's not that the quarterback is getting hit, because he's not. He's not. There's a historic low amount of sacks around the league last year. What we're seeing is quarterbacks that just throw the ball as soon as they get it so they don't get sacked. And they're throwing it to easy targets so they don't throw interceptions.
Yeah.
It just that doesn't translate to points.
See, and that's the Flowers factor there. You're saying that quarterback gets ball, throws right away. Okay, the ball is almost to Eli on the snap, and Flowers has already given up the sack, so that's the problem.
That shows how bad he is. Most quarterbacks can get rid of the ball that quickly. Eli can't because Flowers is that bad. It's not even like they were doing real technical stuff to him either. There was one that I saw. I forget which one it was, but the guy just basically shoved his hands out of the way, just flew right by him. It's just like, oh, my God, you cannot play in the NFL if you're going to get beat by that. that. You just can't. I mean, he was a complete dumpster fire. And you're putting those kinds of things on a national stage. That's what you're talking about. You're not talking about the Lions going 2-0 and having kind of a pretty exciting team.
Yeah.
You're looking at how bad the Giants are, and that seems to be the storyline, and it has been. If it wasn't officiating controversy, it's the lack of quality on the field in almost every primetime game. I mean, I don't know if you had to suffer through that Thursday night game, but I did.
I watched it.
Andy Dalton was probably the only rival to Eric Flowers this past week in terms of just gut-wrenching play. I have no clue what he was doing. I'm not sure how they don't have a backup plan in the works right now except for firing our offensive coordinator and replacing him with the coach of the guys. It was horrible. But they're in the bottom nine as well. You know, which one of these teams is the worst, truly? It's hard to decide.
I was a little suspicious when they started the game, and instead of running out with the Bengals flag, they ran out with a white one. Like, okay, that's not good.
They're all wearing white. It's like, okay, that's the perfect metaphor for your year already, and you don't even know.
We surrender.
Yeah. All right. It's not even like Houston was trying to beat him either. I mean, Watson was only just a little bit better than Dalton was.
I know.
Their whole game was just a nightmare.
Well, that's because when they got to SportsCenter, the Watson 45-yard run, I think, was shown 72 times.
That was the highlight of the game. That was it.
Let's go back one more time.
One
more time. Neil, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much, my friend.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for the sports bozo of the day. I don't know where to go with this one. Robert Griffin III celebrated when the Washington Redskins fired Mike Shanahan, according to former teammate Santana Moss. However, Moss told a local radio station that Griffin's giddiness hurt him in the end. Griffin denies having done so, and on Twitter said that Moss is openly lying about me and it's a betrayal. Moss, appearing on 106.7 The Fan, said the perception was that Griffin appeared happy over Shanahan's ouster after the 2013 season. The extent of the problems weren't fully divulged until late in Griffin's second season, at which point it became clear Mike Shanahan would not return for a fifth year. He was fired with 1 year to go on his contract. He benched Griffin in favor of Kirk Cousins for the final three games. Moss said, quote, so 2014 comes and Jay Gruden comes in, and, quote, he don't care. We see that now he doesn't care. He don't care what he says about you, and he doesn't care about what he says at you. Okay. What a fun league this is, isn't it? I don't, you know, that's,
yeah.
You can pick your spot on that one as to what's what. All right. Talking about quarterbacks of today. All right, let's take three quarterbacks. In fact, I'm going to take four quarterbacks. All right, if you don't mind here. I'll do that. That are considered the greatest quarterbacks of their generation, okay? And they're all Hall of Famers. Now, the game, of course, has changed over time. Oops. The game has changed over time. I understand that. But the product that we are seeing today, amazing. Now, I'm not going to put Joe Namath in here, because Namath had, his interception numbers were astronomical, and he had the one championship, and he only got to the playoffs twice. But listen to this all-star group I picked out here to take a look at. And if there's anybody else that should be in, fact, I'm going to throw one more in here, if you don't mind. Okay. Here's the last one here I wanted. There we go. Him. And we'll give you the stats on each guy. These would be 6 quarterbacks that I think within their generation would be discussed as among the best. Fair enough? Okay. Right, Johnny Unitas, the golden arm. Most of his career with the Colts, one last go-around with the Chargers at the end when he was 40. Won 3 NFL championships, 58, 59, Super Bowl V in 1970. Also quarterbacked in the NFL championship game in 64. In his career, he played 211 games, 185 of them were starts. He completed 55% of his passes. He threw for 290 yards. He threw 290 touchdowns, including, I think, was it 47 straight games with a touchdown pass, I think was the number. And he threw 253 interceptions. Right? So 290, 253. And 55% completion. You know, and this is a guy that in his career won 3 NFL titles. Then in 67, his team won 11 games. In 64, his team won 12 games. An incredible career. Dan Marino. Okay, no Super Bowl wins. He went to the Super Bowl once. But 14 wins in 84, 12 in 85. 12 and 90, 11 and 92, 10 wins in 94, 10 wins in 98. Okay? He had 59% of his passes. He threw 420 touchdowns and 252 interceptions. And by the way, averaged 7.3 yards per attempt. Unitas averaged 7.8 yards per attempt. Joe Montana, 4 Super Bowl wins, 273 touchdown passes, 139 interceptions, hit 63% of his passes. He averaged 7.5 yards per attempt. So he's the low guy right now at 7.5 yards an attempt.
Now when it comes to Montana, though, people don't talk about this all that much. He could really run with the ball, too.
Right, no, he could do all this, but I'm just talking about that. I mean, listen to what the numbers they put up. And his team's 13 wins in 81, 10 in 83, 14 in 84, 10 in 87, 11 in 89, 14 in 90. All right? And this includes his time in Kansas City. 7.5 yards per attempt. That's the lowest number there. 273, 139. All right? Bart Starr. 196 games in his career, 152 touchdown passes, 138 interceptions. Again, different time they ran the ball. But he had 57% of his passes. 152 touchdown, 138 interception. Oh, 7.8 yards per attempt. He won 5 championships. Won 5. Okay. Now, way back, Otto Graham. Otto Graham, between the AAFC and the NFL, quarterbacked in 10 consecutive championship games. 10 consecutive championship games. Amazing.
Timing's kind of interesting in the 50s. Otto Graham retired in 55, and who made his debut in 56?
Unitas.
Johnny U, yep.
56% completions, 174 touchdowns, 135 interceptions, 9 yards per attempt. 3 different times in his career he averaged better than 10 yards per attempt. All right. Brett Favre, 302 games, 508 touchdowns, 336 interceptions. Overall, 62% completion. 508 touchdowns, 336 interceptions. He averaged 7.1 yards per attempt. He's actually the lowest of the group I talked about.
Yeah, and you're talking about the NFL quarterbacks that just don't want to take a chance anymore down the field. That's the first guy I thought of was Brett Favre.
Yeah.
Maybe now, this is because he just got in the Hall of Fame last year. Maybe this is kind of a top-of-mind thing. But
no, but I wanted to pick out quarterbacks that were gold standard from their particular era. Unitas and Starr were gold standard guys. Marino, even though he didn't win a Super Bowl, gold standard guy. Montana, gold standard. Otto Graham, different era, but gold standard. And then, of course, Brett Favre. They all threw picks, but they all averaged over 7 yards per attempt, between 7.1 and 9.2 yards per attempt. Amazing. I mean, it's amazing. I mentioned the 11 starting quarterbacks that we outlined the first half numbers on Sunday. What did they average? 4.79 yards per attempt. Are you kidding me? I'm sorry, that's not good football. Unitas, in his heyday, 9.3 yards an attempt in 64, 9.0 in 65, 8.2 in 60, 8.5 in 57. Okay, he's getting a little older, 7.9 in 66, 34 years old, 7.9 yards per attempt in 67. I mean, even in 72, he's 39 years old, he played 8 games, he started 5. He still averaged 7.1 yards per attempt. Marino, yards per attempt, 9 in 1984, 7.9, there's 7.1, 7.0, 8.3 in 93, 7.0, 7.2, 7.3. I mean, getting it downfield, Montana, yards per attempt, 8.4, 7.4, 7.3, 7.6, 7.7, 7.5, 9.1, right? 37 years old with the Kansas City Chiefs, 11 starts, 7.2 yards per attempt. Bart Starr, 7.3, 7.9, 8.2, 8.6. This is per attempt, not per completion. This is per attempt. So that lets you know they're getting the ball downfield. 1966. Hey, that's the Super Bowl 1 year. 9.0, 67, 8.7, 68. Okay, where the Packers actually struggled a bit. He only could play in 9 games. He averaged 9.5 yards an attempt. Otto Graham, 10.5, 10.2, 8.1, 9.8, 7.7. Probably got a cut in pay. 8.3, 7.7, 10.6, 8.7, 9.3. 34 years old, he goes 9-2-1 as a starter, hits 53% of his passes, 15 touchdowns, 8 picks, 9.3 yards per attempt. Brett Favre, almost all in the sevens. I think his top out 7.9 when he was with the Vikings, believe it or not. But these guys all got the ball down the field. Those 11 quarterbacks that I talked about the other day, from Jason LaConfora's article, Jason's the one that did all the legwork on that. I'll freely admit I did all the legwork on this part. But Jason LaConfora did all the legwork on the first half numbers of 11 starting quarterbacks in the league. 11. 4.79 yards per attempt. That stinks. Part of it is mediocre offensive line play. Part of it is quarterback capability. And part of it is very tentative, cautious play calling, trying to avoid a mistake at every cost. I don't find that to be entertaining at all. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Sunbury Motors Kia is having their annual new Kia inventory adjustment sale. Every brand new Kia's price will be adjusted to make room for the 18. Sunbury Motors Kia has 12 2017 Kia Souls starting at $15,996. That's $3,204 off the iconic Kia Soul. Sunbury Motors Kia has the deepest discount on their most popular Kia Sorento this month only. Take $5,221 off all 2017 Sorentos. Hurry in. There's only 10 left starting at $24,989. There's $4,001 off 2017 Kia Optima. Optimus start at just $19,709. Remember, all Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. There's brand new Kia Rios under $14,000. SMC is very motivated to sell every 2017 Kia in stock at the lowest prices of the year. Hurry in to Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf.
Tax and tax extra. Offers expire 9/17. Restrictions apply. Warranty is limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer, go to Kia.com.
Well, maybe it's because coaches get fired. Who knows? Although it seems like certain coaches have been able to maintain some semblance of longevity. Marvin Lewis, Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh, Jason Garrett. Andy Reid was obviously with Philadelphia for a long time and now has certainly started to put down roots in Kansas City. So it's not as if we don't have some coaches in the NFL that don't have some longevity to them, like McCarthy in Green Bay. I think Belichick's been there for a couple of years, hasn't he? So, Pete Carroll in Seattle. I mean, you've got some long-term coaches in this league. Now, there's certain organizations that, the first sign of a problem, they panic. And as I've said many, many times, the worst kind of leadership is the leadership that operates by panic. It's trust your decisions, trust who you are, trust your instincts. You got an instinct about something, and you're not guessing. And that's been, as I mentioned yesterday, the problem with ESPN and the NFL. Both of them went from being so sure of every decision they made and had great gut instinct about it to now guessing all the time. And now, because they're guessing so much, they're getting off the rails. The NFL's off the rails a bit right now because they're guessing a lot with some key decisions. ESPN is off the rails because they have just completely misjudged the millennial market, and they're guessing as to what works and what doesn't work. And that's when it comes to organizations and coaches. Yeah, part of it's a guess, but part of it is you got to trust your own instinct. What does your gut tell you as to what to do in a certain situation, how to handle it? Then trust it. Now, the patience and the trust are the two most difficult elements in sticking with a decision. Always is. But if you have enough patience to go with enough trust, most time, if you follow your gut and you've got a feel for it, it'll work out for you. Paul Allen had a feeling about Pete Carroll. It's worked out great for Seattle. Robert Kraft had an absolute feeling about Bill Belichick way back. Remember, Belichick, when he went to New England, was not a hot commodity. He was coming off the Cleveland thing. There was a little bit of a debacle as to what it was like with the Jets and so forth. He was not a hot commodity. John Harbaugh was the special teams coach for the Eagles. Mike Tomlin was a coordinator, I think, with the Vikings. Now, Marvin Lewis was the defensive coordinator for the Ravens. Jason Garrett kind of had worked his way up a bit. Sean Payton with New Orleans, offensive coordinator with the Giants, offensive coordinator with Dallas. Saints sign him. So you got to have a feeling about it. What does your gut tell you about somebody? Yeah, how much were the Jacksonville Jaguars helped by, I think we'll get rid of Jack Del Rio. He had a pretty good run for you. Now look what he's doing with Oakland. And so these organizations that, I was reciting all the numbers. I mean, check out all the teams they're playing for. The vast majority of them are where there's turnover every couple of years. So you've got guys that are going in there, they're fearing for their job. Well, I can't call that play. If I call that play and it's intercepted, they're going to fire me. And they're producing a dull product right now. Really dull. The Bengals game against the Texans on Thursday night, I watched three quarters of it. I watched the first half, and then I rejoined in the fourth quarter. Oh. Look, I know Billy has a lot of injuries, no tight ends, all three tight ends out, tackles are out. I got that part. But my goodness, 13-9. Carolina beat Buffalo, 9-3. 9-3. Brutal. At least in the college game, people are putting up points.
I'm not planning on watching Rams 49ers on Thursday night, are you? I don't know.
I might watch a little bit of it just to see Goff play a little bit, if Goff is better or not. So yeah. I might check in for a quarter in that. What's the college game that night? I mean, I've got DVDs of Bond movies. Maybe I'll watch one of those. I think I'll watch Spectre again. Or Skyfall or something. What is the Thursday night college game?
It's still coming up here.
There we go. You're killing us.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, really, killing us. I feel like the first 5 years. What's going on here?
Let's see. Temple, South Florida, Thursday night.
Oh.
Hey, we got a top 25 team in there.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
And you'll be happy to know Ben McAdoo says Eric Flowers absolutely still the Giants' starting left tackle.
There's less traffic flowing through the Holland Tunnel tonight. If you're a defensive end, it's the equivalent of having easy pass. Eli Manning just found religion.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.